Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old school friend Lockwood Phillips. We get together once a week to discuss world affairs. This week we focused mainly on the G20 summit. I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Points around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon as we celebrate the day after the 4th of July. In fact, Tom is in, well, arguably the homeland that we separated from several hundred years ago, 250 years ago approximately. And with that, Thomas, good afternoon. How are things there in the United Kingdom and London? And was there a 4th of July celebration in your neighborhood by any chance?
No, there was no 4th of July celebration. It is 4th of July weather. It is hot. It is really hot. It's in the upper 80s, which is quite hot for the UK. We had a 4th of July celebration years ago, my wife and I. And one of the Brits described it as the day that we celebrate getting rid of the colonies.
Well, do they have fireworks for such days as this? We had fireworks galore here in the country. I'm just wondering, do you have fireworks displays there in the United Kingdom? If so, when and for what reason?
We have fireworks displays on the 5th of November, which is called Guy Fawkes Day. And that is the day that... about 400 years ago, a man called Guy Fawkes, or Guido Fawkes, tried to blow up Parliament. At the very last minute, the plot was exposed, and all the king, the lords, and all the parliamentarians were saved. They were all gathered together in Parliament. They would have all gone up together, and it was a Catholic plot. And so we celebrate that, and because it was going to be gunpowder and there were going to be literally fireworks in Parliament, they used fireworks to celebrate it.
Right, right. They were going to blow. As a matter of fact, he had fireworks underneath Parliament, as I recall the story goes.
Yep.
And of course, Guy Fawkes is renowned, of course, for Anonymous here in the United States as well. I just thought I'd make that connection. Of course, we've got Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. This portion has been pre-recorded to accommodate his beauty sleep, and I can appreciate it's almost 11 o'clock, as we're 11:30, as a matter of fact, when we're hearing this program here in our neighborhood. Tom, the weather you mentioned was hot. Is this unusual temperature for you in London by any chance?
No, it's not unusual. I mean, it's going on quite a long time now. We've had a few cooler days, but it's been about a month of quite warm weather.
Well, we call that summertime here in the States. You do have summer there in London, right?
Yeah, but it's usually only 2 weeks.
Oh, my land. Well, hey, that's not much fun. Tom, let's talk about some other interesting issues, and one that is really kind of been percolating now for quite some time here in the States. I actually pretty much over the weekend and through to today, the famous tweet from the president, which is a video of an individual appearing to look like President Trump pounding on a CNN, an individual with a CNN head a block for what would be their head. So we don't know who the individual is in a an American wrestling event. We call that wrestling, by the way. Is that getting much play and much publicity there? It's gotten a great deal over the past couple of days here in the States.
Oh, yes, definitely. It's seen basically as a metaphor for Trump wanting to beat up on the media in general and wanting to control the media. I can see, however, I've been thinking quite a bit about this, and as you know, I'm not a great Trump supporter, and I'm also a great supporter generally of liberal newspapers like the New York Times. But I think that sometimes in the last few years in particular, because of changing geographic, economic, demographics and things like that, the New York Times and Washington Post and some of the other papers have become more liberal than they were in the past. Now, I think there's a good reason for it. I mean, I've read these papers over years and years and years. And I think there's a good reason for it. And that is, say, 30, 40 years ago, their market was defined by geography. And that geography was New York and its environs.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was defined by geography, it had to appeal to a large audience within that geographic region. With the onset of the internet and the decline in the print media, if it's going to survive and maintain an audience share or enough readers to keep it going, it has had to geographically spread its audience using the internet. And the only way it could do that was to shift its editorial policy to attract to a wider audience, which in this case is the liberal global audience. And I think that's why you've seen a lot of these big brand newspapers becoming more and more liberal in their approach.
So they're basically responding to a broader audience.
Yes, and they have to respond to it in order to survive and prosper.
Well,
in the case of the New York Times, it's far from failing. It's doing very well. In fact, Trump is the best news they've had in ages.
Well, there's truth to that. And it's been an interesting week of that. And I would say that it's generated a lot of awareness for organizations and such things as media, CNN and others. But at the same time, it is intriguing that you're seeing a lot of news coverage on this. This is for some of us, and I'm one of those who are pretty cynical about the whole issue, is it's much ado about nothing. And I'm wondering, is that an attitude there among some of the pundits? Or for that matter, let's look at the political leaders. Does this in any way influence them? I'm curious about their opinion of the states and particularly President Trump.
Well, first of all, about the pundits, here in the UK and in Europe, freedom of speech, freedom of press, just as in the US, is one of the pillars of the political system. And so anything which is seen as an attack on the free press is seen as an attack on that pillar. Whether it's an attack by an American on American press, they're seen as an attack on freedom of press everywhere in the world.
Okay.
So that's why they are looking at it very carefully. As for much ado about nothing, well, I'm not so sure about that. Again, there's a lot of symbolism, and I don't think you can disregard the symbolism, especially as it's being symbolized, if you like, by the President of the United States.
Okay. Well, we will. There has been a lot of discussion about that as well. Again, just to remind folks, our guest this evening, is Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And by the way, just to remind you, tomorrow's news today at lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio, heard on radio stations around the country, including this station, Friday evenings here on the talk station. Tom, before I wrap it up and go to another more important issue, I'm just curious, in looking back at the revolution, and we've got about a minute to go, I'm just curious, you've said that one of your friends suggested that it was when the United Kingdom or Great Britain at that time had England had discarded one of its colonies. Is there any ever thought of, in light of all the events that have been taking place in the States, that maybe it would be nice to have the U.S. back under a colony of the UK by any chance? Any discussion in that? But I'm just curious.
Well, maybe it'd be reversed. Maybe the UK become a colony of the United States.
No. All right, we'll get to more details in a moment here on Look
After
Ahead.
After Brexit, you say?
Yes, we'll get to that too. Here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
This is Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com's expanded world analysis for the week beginning the 10th of July. Look Ahead broadcasts tomorrow's News Today so that you can plan to participate. President Donald Trump is off to Europe again. He will be in France on Friday for the annual Bastille Day celebrations as the special guest of President Emmanuel Macron. The newly elected French leader is working hard at developing a relationship with Trump and projecting himself as the go-to person in Europe. German Chancellor Angela Merkel and President Macron will discuss the Trump visit when they meet the day before. The two leaders will also discuss plans for greater EU defense cooperation and ways to make the EU less bureaucratic and more accountable. In Trieste on Wednesday, the Italian government will host the fourth Western Balkans summit, which will focus on EU enlargement into the Western Balkans. Eastern Europe will be the scene for annual NATO exercises, involving 25,000 troops from 20 countries. The exercises, known as Sabre Guardian 17, will take place in Bulgaria, Romania, and Hungary. On Wednesday and Thursday, the 19th EU-Ukraine summit will be held in Kiev. The agenda of the summit will focus on the conflict in eastern Ukraine and the implementation of the Minsk agreements. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov is traveling around Western Europe next week. On Tuesday and Wednesday, he is in Brussels for talks with the EU High Representative for Foreign Affairs, Federica Mogherini, before flying to Berlin to meet his German counterpart, Sigmar Gabriel. In Britain, King Philippe VI of Spain and Queen Letizia make a state visit to the UK on Wednesday through Saturday. The visit comes at a time of increasing Anglo-Spanish tensions over Brexit and the future of Gibraltar. In Northern Ireland on Wednesday, it's time for the annual Orange Day parades. The summer parades are always a cause for concern, but this year more than usual because of the failure of Sinn Féin and the Protestant Democratic Unionist Party to reach a power-sharing agreement and the decision of Britain's ruling Conservative Party to seek DUP support in the British Parliament. Japan hosts a meeting on Tuesday of the chief negotiators from all the Trans-Pacific Partnership countries except the United States. The meeting has been called to discuss the future of the deal after President Trump's decision to withdraw. In Brazil on Tuesday, the Senate votes on President Michel Temer's landmark labor reform bill. It's the first major overhaul of Brazil's labor policy in 70 years. Critics say the plans will bring about more temporary work contracts and outsourcing. And that was next week's News Today so that you can plan to participate in the world around you. Stay tuned after this message for Viewpoints Around the World with myself and Lockwood Phillips.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of Look Ahead Radio and lookaheadnews.com. I was about to put Look Ahead ahead of Tom. No, but it's Tom Arms who's ahead of lookaheadnews.com. Tomorrow's news today, simply by going online to lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, let's look at other issues happening around the world. And this is a big one. And of course, we mentioned a moment ago the topic of President Trump, but the G20, and that's starting next week. Is that correct?
It's starting this Friday.
All right, let's talk about the G20, its location. How long will it last? And what can we expect? First, what's the location?
Hamburg. As in hamburger,
right?
But without the ER.
All right, and
in Germany.
Okay, and then the next question: length of time, how many days? And
2 days.
Just.
But Trump is coming over a day early to attend a meeting in Poland.
Which, by the way,
fly the flag at Wrocław.
Which, by the way, I understand the Polish government's pretty excited about entertaining.
Very excited. Very excited.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, he's the president of the United States. You can't overstate the importance of the president of the United States to other countries. I mean, you know, they're very keen for a start to make certain that the United States defends Poland. Mm-hmm. Poland's become the forward-based area for NATO. And so they want to stress this and create a relationship with Donald Trump, especially given some of his past statements about NATO. They're very nervous about that.
All right. So there's some concern about maintaining a close relationship with the states. The other question, of course, has to do with the the Polish government. Have there not been some major changes there?
There have been some changes, but generally it's a very conservative government, which probably fits in well with Donald Trump. There are some disagreements with between the Polish government and the EU leader Donald Tusk, who used to be the head of the Polish government. The government and Tusk dislike each other a great deal, and they're constantly fighting. So in that respect, and because of that, there's some tension between Poland and the EU,
right,
which probably fits in with Donald Trump's view of the world as well. I think it should be a fairly successful trip for both sides.
All right, then let's talk about the reception of President Trump at the G20, but also what can we expect at the G20? Now, we're also going to see the arrival of Vladimir Putin. I always get it confused. Prime Minister of
President.
Is he president? Okay, I get them confused there with
Russia. The Prime Minister of Dmitry Medvedev.
Medvedev, that's right. Let's talk about the reception that we can expect for President Trump and for President Putin.
Well, let's just say that I think this G20 summit is going to be a massive diplomatic mess. I mean, all these multinational summits, one of their main purposes is to be showcases of high-level cooperation to demonstrate to the lower orders, that's people like you and me, that the world is safe and in good hands. And at the moment, you know, that's not the case. This summit will expose inadequacies and discord. Russia and the U.S. on the cusp of coming to blows over Syria. India and China, the same over their border. China's against everyone over the South and East China Seas. Saudi Arabia is trying to squeeze Qatar into submission and is under attack for human rights abuses in Yemen. Russia has a corruption problem. Italy has a potential bankruptcy problem. The UK has a Brexit problem. South Africa's Zuma fears a prison cell when he leaves office. Ditto for Brazil's president. And South Korea's just sent their president to jail.
So now, after the first day, what will they talk about? Oh, wow. You know, we're going to have a scorecard. We're going to have, by the way, I would hope that Look Ahead News.com and Look Ahead Radio will be maintaining a scorecard. Who's on first, as we like to say here in the States. But this,
what?
You know, no,
what's on first?
No, who's on first? What's on second? But anyhow, and fella is pitching. That's another story. This is really interesting. I'm not being a strong student of the G20, previous G20 meetings, Tom. Is this been the predicament in the past by any chance?
Well, it's always had these sort of issues, but, you know,
wow.
I think it's more pronounced than ever. And then on top of that, they're estimating something like 250,000 demonstrators.
Demonstrating for
They've
what?
Had to recruit 14,000 policemen from around Germany.
Demonstrating for what?
Everything.
Okay.
Everything. There will be people demonstrating there. This is the whole thing about this G20. There's going to be people coming from South Africa to demonstrate about Jacob Zuma, who's a crook. And I won't even say alleged. You know, he is. And there will be people demonstrating about Donald Trump, people demonstrating about climate change, people demonstrating for gay rights in Russia, people demonstrating for human rights in China. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on.
You know,
it's going to be a rainbow demonstration.
Literally and figuratively. You know,
yes.
As I'm listening to this, and we'll get to more serious issues here in a moment with you, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. You're aware that in the States, Barnum & Bailey, Coal Brothers Circus has closed down. They are no longer
it's moved to Hamburg.
It's just taken on a whole new concept. Okay, there are several issues associated with this, and we're going to get into more details in a few minutes. Can we anticipate anything of significance happening at the G20 relative to major conflagrations. We'll talk about Syria, but just quickly before I move on to a few other items, and we're going to come back to Raqqa. But is there anything that we can anticipate, or is there any anticipation of any solutions coming from this meeting?
No, no clear-cut solutions, because there's no clear-cut international problem at the moment. But there's going to be some interesting bilaterals, and we're going to segue into Raqqa in a moment. And the most interesting bilateral is probably going to be Trump-Putin. And the reason for that is Syria. Russia is trying to get into Raqqa. America's trying to get into Raqqa so that they can basically dislodge the other one before a final solution is reached, and have a say on the final solution in Syria.
Now, you said last week that, in fact, and there's some dissatisfaction between Chancellor Merkel and President Trump related to the efforts on the part of, Germany and other countries to strike up negotiations for fuel reserves and energy reserves coming from Russia going into Central Europe.
Yes.
Is that still a hot topic?
Yes, and it'll be a hot topic for some time. It will be raised at the G20. I should say that in Germany, every political party supports it.
Mm-hmm.
They're all in favor of it for a lot of reasons.
Okay.
One is it would turn Germany into an energy hub, because the gas would come from Russia across the Baltic into northern Germany and then be dispersed from there around Western Europe.
Okay. And the other question has to do very quickly with the issue of refugees. Will this subject come up in the meeting this weekend?
Of course it will. It's a continuing problem. There are not so many coming from across the Aegean Sea now, but they are coming across Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And every day we get reports of thousands and thousands of them landing in Italy or landing in Malta, and hundreds drowning in the Mediterranean.
Mm. All right. LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, where you can find Tom Arms, our guest this afternoon, our foreign editor, more than a guest. He's actually a regular program here on Viewpoints Around the World. Again, heard on radio stations around the world. And go to that website, LookAheadNews.com. Right after this break, Tom, we'll talk back. We'll come back to some specific issues that might be discussed in the G20 conversation coming up this weekend.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're chatting with him about the G20, which starts this weekend. Specific issues I want to talk to you about, Tom, that might be a topic of discussion. Let's talk first about North Korea and their missile development. Apparently, they have an ICBM, intercontinental ballistic missile, and they're trying to aim it at or build it such that it'll land somewhere in the States. Is this a concern to the European community in general? Might this be a topic at the G20?
It will certainly be a topic at the G20. It's certainly of concern to the Europeans. Obviously, if Kim Jong-un set off one of his transatlantic missiles, which probably is not yet capable of holding a nuclear warhead, but I think that's probably been well reported. But if he did, then, the possibility, the United States would have to react, and it would probably react with its own second strike. Mm-hmm. And that would have severe repercussions right around the globe. So everyone is holding their breath and watching it with great interest. Now, the G20 summit, obviously, I think there might be a trilateral between Xi Jinping, the Chinese president, Vladimir Putin, the Russian president, and Donald Trump, president of the United States.
And but my question is, will anyone from either North or South Korea be in attendance at the G20?
Yes, someone from South Korea would be there. But as I've always said, that the South Koreans are in this instance, or they're a proxy.
Mm-hmm.
They're an American proxy. They're totally in American hands. I mean, they have expressed concern over the deployment of high-altitude defense system in South Korea because they think it's exacerbating the situation rather than helping it. But generally speaking, the decisions are going to be made in Washington, Beijing, and in Moscow. Now, Moscow also has a border with North Korea, or Russia does. And they have, Russia and China have said that they need to put more pressure. They actually said it after this latest test, that they have said they need to put more pressure upon North Korea and that they were prepared to do it. Now, they haven't been specific, and it may be that something will come out of the G20 summit about specific types of pressure that Russia and China are prepared to put on North Korea. They have also said that the United States has to do its bit, and they suggested that a withdrawal of partial or complete withdrawal of the high-altitude defense system might be the way for the Trump administration to go.
All right, we'll leave it at that. We in the States are very cynical about that. Let's talk about, you know, the Pacific Rim has really gotten pretty intense, and the Sino-Indian border dispute and Bhutan, am I correct about that? Related
Bhutan,
to
Bhutan, Sikkim, Tibet, China,
wow,
India, where they all come together. Sikkim is now a province of of India after 1975, but where they all come together, there is a border of about 120 miles.
Right.
And that has been disputed since the dawn of time, almost. And basically, then it's flared up again. There was a war in 1962. It coincided with the Cuban Missile Crisis, so it wasn't really reported much in the American press, or the European press, for that matter. But there was a war between India and China over it. The rooftop war, it was called, because it really is at the roof of the world. In the Himalayas. Hardly anyone lives up there. And you may ask, why? Why are they disputing it? And the answer is water.
Okay. Very good.
I mean, that is where so much water originates that feeds Southeast Asia, South Asia, India, Bangladesh, Vietnam, etc. And if you can control those headwaters, then you can control a lot.
All right. Very quickly, because I want to move to Raqqa. I mean, this is really, as you initiated a few moments ago in the last segment about the craziness and the intensity of the upcoming G20 meeting in Hamburg, Germany. This is part of this. Very quickly, we've also got India and Pakistan. Will this be one of the topics of the G20?
What, the whole Sino-Indian? Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this is an opportunity for the, again, a lot of the,
India,
if anything's going to be achieved, it's more likely to be achieved in bilaterals.
Okay.
And so Xi Jinping could meet with Narendra Modi.
And this is going to be, he's going to be very busy, obviously. Let's move to another hotspot in the world, and a series now of stories appearing everywhere. What happens once ISIS is eliminated? And of course, Raqqa is their last stronghold. You've got the Kurds, you've got the Syrians, you've got the Iranians, you've got the Iraqis, you've got the Russians, you've got the Turks, and even the U.S. playing a role in this, hard keeping score and knowing, again, who's on first. What's to be expected here, and will this be a discussion of the G20 as well? Might this be the number one item of the G20?
It could be the number one item. North Korea could be the number. There's a lot of them vying for that title. It's certainly up there, and I think that is going to be one of the big topics between the Putin-Trump bilateral. Now, Trump, as you know, has been saying for some time he'd like to cooperate with Russia in Syria. Well, at the moment, the U.S. is basically jockeying for position. They are blasting away at the walls of Raqqa, and they're getting their proxies, the Kurds, to get in there before the Russians, so that basically they can have some say in a post-war Syria and a post-war Iraq and a post-war position in the Middle East, which they want to hang on to. Now, that's going to be difficult because the Russians appear to have backed the winner. The winner looks like it's going to be Assad. And so it would be Assad who would decide who's going to have military forces based in his territory. It would be Assad who decides who gets the big contracts to rebuild Syria and so forth and so on. But the U.S. has to try and get in there. It's a bit like after World War II when the Russians were racing and the British and the Americans were racing to see who could get to Berlin first.
Right. Well, the other, but there's another side to this. And of course, we have the Kurds who are, if you will, pardon the pun, a Trump player because they're also disliked by the Turks, Turkey. And this is not going to be a comfortable peace arrangement, is it?
No, it's going to be a very uncomfortable peace arrangement because, and it's going to affect U.S.-Turkish relations because if the U.S. backs the Kurds and the Kurds get a state, which is what they want, or get some sort of homeland bordering on Turkey, then that could become a base from which to support the PKK, which is the Kurdish organization fighting against Erdogan in Turkey. And that would damage U.S.-Turkish relations and Turkish membership of NATO, which will result in complete restructuring of NATO because we have bases in Turkey and everything else.
Who said that?
So, you know, it's very important what's happening now. And who comes out where and on top is going to have a major influence over the structure of the Middle East.
You know,
and a bit wider for the next 50 years.
We have soap operas here in the country and in the States, and I'm thinking this is really a major soap opera happening worldwide. And who said diplomacy is boring? Let's talk about two quick...
I never said it.
I know. Let's talk about two other quick items here, speaking of diplomacy. We have Chancellor Merkel. She's changed her mind on gay diplomacy. What's going on that? And is this...
Gay marriage.
Okay, marriage. Okay.
Did I say gay diplomacy?
Yes, you did in your note, but that's all right. It applies. What's going on? Is this because of the G20 happening in Hamburg and to sort of quell the possible riot that might occur?
Now, maybe I said diplomacy because I was thinking that it requires more diplomacy in gay marriage. I don't know.
It probably does. But no, what about...
I think probably surprise... requires more diplomacy in a straight heterosexual marriage.
But my question is...
why?
Yeah.
Because she was very much opposed to it. Very much opposed to it. And now she's saying, oh, I always, you know, liked the idea. And I think she even thinking about attending a few gay marriages. It's the elections.
Okay. Oh, wait a second. Wait. I thought she had the elections in the bag.
Look, have you not been watching all these election results? Everyone who thinks they've got elections in the bag in the last few years have been proven completely wrong.
Very good.
And so there's no such thing as an election in the bag.
Okay. So so the election, but I assume also this will have some impact on the potential protests that will be taking place in Hamburg during the G20.
Oh, probably. But the thing is that it is because of the elections. And it's always possible. You never know what will happen between now and September the 24th, that the alternative for Deutschland, the far right, may find a cause that will mean that other people, that German voters will, you know, come flocking to their banner, in which case it would be Angela Merkel's CDU that would suffer.
Okay.
And right. if that were to happen, then she would need to form another coalition with the Social Democratic Party. It's possible the Free Democratic Party may actually have an upsurge, or the Green Party. Any of those things are possible. And they're into coalition politics in Germany. At the moment, it looks as if she can win without having a coalition. But past performance indicates that normally the elections are followed by a coalition. And all of the other parties, every single one of them except the Alternative for Deutschland, has said, we will not form a coalition with any party that does not support gay marriage.
Interesting. All right, we're going to get to more details here in a moment. I want to get tabbed back to one other quick issue of politics, and then we'll close it out with an interesting story about sock diplomacy. Coming up in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Stability, order, security. That's what these big multinational summits are meant to project. They're designed to reassure the lower orders, that's you and me and a few billion others, that planet Earth is in safe hands as it hurtles around the sun at 66,000 miles per hour. I am not reassured. In fact, a look at the G20 Hamburg lineup has left me seriously worried. North Korea now has an intercontinental ballistic missile, nuclear weapons, and a juvenile dictator with a bad haircut. But Russia, China, and America cannot agree on how to deal with him. Russia, the United States, and its allies are on the cusp of coming to blows over Syria and Ukraine. India and China are the same over their border at the rooftop of the world. Then there's China against everyone over the South and East China Seas. Saudi Arabia is trying to squeeze Qatar into submission and under attack for human rights abuses in Yemen and support for Islamic extremism. Russia has a corruption problem, gay problem, and a human rights problem. Italy has a potential bankruptcy problem. The UK has a Brexit problem compounded by a leadership vacuum. South Africa's Jacob Zuma fears a prison cell when he leaves office. Ditto for Brazil's Michel Temer. And South Korea has just sent their president to jail. Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto is unsuccessfully fighting a war against the drug cartels with an approval rating that has plunged from 53 to 17%. Turkey is politically schizoid. It can't decide whether it wants to be in or out of the EU, secular or Islamic, pro or anti-NATO, a democracy or a dictatorship. Indonesia is also fighting to save its secular political institutions in the face of a resurgent Islam. A ray of hope has emerged from recent elections in France in the form of Emmanuel Macron, but he's saddled with a legacy of economic mismanagement which has led to poor national productivity, unemployment levels at 10% plus, a $2 trillion debt, and a public sense of entitlement that will be difficult to overcome. It's a big problem for Macron, and if he wants confirmation, he should chat with Argentina's Mauricio Macri, who has spent the past 18 months trying to come to grips with the results of 12 years of economic mismanagement by successive Kirchner governments. Then there's Donald Trump, the leader of the free world. His base in rural America is built on granite. Everywhere else in the U.S., it is sinking into the sand. The result is a hopelessly divided country which weakens his position on the international stage. Not that he had much support from the other world leaders to start with. They don't know whether to laugh at his tweets or panic at his attacks on the press and any critic anywhere, or his anti-free trade America first policy, his withdrawal from the Paris Climate Change Agreement, travel bans, attacks on the rule of law, his dislike of the EU, his military posturing, and or his ghetto vocabulary. Normally, the attendees of these summits look to the President of the United States for leadership. Not this time. There are a few bright spots. Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel is the mortar that has held European cornerstone in place through successive crises. But her room for maneuver is circumscribed by federal elections in September. And after 12 years at the top, Ms. Merkel would be the first to argue that it's time for fresh blood. There are some willing and able to take on the role. Macron has already been mentioned. There's also Canadian Premier Justin Trudeau, although his taste in socks leaves something to be desired. And Although Canada is an important country, as is Australia, its economy is not big enough to fill the current leadership vacuum. While the leaders are locked in their debating chamber, the streets of Hamburg will be filled with 100,000-plus angry demonstrators. The city fathers have recruited an additional 14,000 police to deal with them. They are a rainbow coalition of dissent that will be shouting about trade, gay rights, Israel, Brexit, austerity, Yemen, Syria, press freedom, Trump, Putin, Erdogan, oh, the list goes on and on. But what they are really demanding is reassuring leadership so that they can go back to being butchers, bakers, and candlestick makers.
Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we were chatting a few moments ago about elections and campaigning, in this case, Chancellor Merkel in Germany. Let's talk about France and President Macron and his success. And apparently it's surprising everyone. He will be at the G20. What role will he play at the G20 event this weekend? And what's happening in France?
You mean France, don't you?
Yes.
Not France.
Oh,
France.
France. I'm sorry. Yes.
What's happening in France? Well, he's taking on a much more monarchical style.
Really?
In fact, the French are calling it Jupiterian, as in Jupiter. He gave a 90-minute, incredibly long-winded speech at Versailles.
Did you say 90? 90 minute?
90 minute.
Wow. Hour and a half. Okay.
Yeah, an hour and a half. It was boycotted by the left-wing members of the National Assembly, who said he's becoming a bit too big for his boots.
Okay.
And he's only just put them on. The two big things that came out of it were his position on the economy and his position on the EU. And on the EU, which was quite interesting, he's basically saying that the EU is in trouble. It's in trouble because it has become too bureaucratic.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's become too bureaucratic, people have become skeptical about its ability to govern. And so something has to be done. So he says that France and Germany, by the end of the year, are going to start a number of what they call democratic consultations across Europe, which countries can participate in if they want to. And the idea is to try and come up with ideas which make the EU institutions more accountable.
Let me interrupt
you. They said that basically...
All right, I've got to interrupt here. It's very interesting. He has taken on the mantle of leadership with the European Union, freshly elected as the president of France. And I'm curious, Chancellor Merkel, does she agree with him? Because she, in fact, has been the de facto leader of the EU. At least that's our estimation here in the States. First, does she welcome his participation in this regard? And is this an indication that there's a power shift happening in the European Union?
Yes, she does welcome it.
Okay.
It's a bit like World War II,
okay,
where Britain was holding the ring, so to speak, waiting for the United States to enter the war.
Mm-hmm.
I think Chancellor Merkel was doing the same thing.
Okay.
She has basically been holding things together, managing crises, but she needed someone, a young, vibrant personality, to come in and basically move Europe forward. And that is how both Merkel and Macron see him.
Interesting. All right. Let's wrap it up with sock diplomacy.
I don't know if you realize or have noticed that the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, has interesting taste in socks. He likes to wear socks, which you notice. Well, he went on a state visit to Ireland recently and he met his match. The Irish Prime Minister, by the way, the Prime Minister of Ireland is called the Taoiseach, and his name is Leo Varadkar, actually had on a pair of socks, red socks, decorated with maple leaves and Mounties.
did they share socks in that meeting?
No, but they did make a joke. And, you know, this is a good thing. You know, the idea is this self-deprecation or whatever, being able to laugh at yourself helps to create a chemistry between leaders.
Yeah. I know.
And we need that political chemistry in order to move forward when we have problems.
Absolutely. Our program this afternoon, of course, brought to you by the folks at Look Ahead Radio and lookaheadnews.com. I want to thank Tom Arms of Look Ahead News being with us this afternoon. And always remember, tomorrow's news today at lookaheadnews.com. And of course, Look Ahead Radio, heard around the country. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for asking me to be here.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.